Welcome to the Financial Analyst Journal author interview series. I'm Pat Light, assistant editor at CFA Institute. We're here today with Bill Rickenstein, CFA, to discuss his recent FAJ article, Tax Efficient Withdrawal Strategies, published in the March-April 2015 issue and co-authored with Kirsten Cook and William Meyer. Bill, thanks for talking with us today.
Well, thank you.
So in this interview series, we invite our authors to discuss their articles with us. We're going to go ahead and get started. Bill, can you tell us a little bit about the genesis of your research or the issue that you saw that needed to be addressed?
Yeah, I have a good friend who retired several years ago, and he showed me his tax forms, and I said, George, not his real name. I said, George, you blew it. And he said, what do you mean? He said, I'm not paying much in taxes. He says, yeah, but you missed the opportunity to take an additional $20,000 out of your 401k this year, and it would have been taxed at 15% the next year, and each year thereafter, he required minimum distributions were going to begin for him, and he's going to be in a 25% tax bracket. So it's a little different, but you actually want to take money out earlier if you can pay taxes at 15% than wait and take it out at 25%. So that got me thinking, you know, how can we help retirees withdraw funds from their portfolios to just using the tax code to make the portfolios last longer? And that was the genesis of the research. And several years later, you have this article.
And so you guys go over a little bit of the prior research and a little bit of the conventional wisdom about withdrawing from your retirement accounts. Can you kind of give us a bird's eye view of what the conventional wisdom was before you guys did this research?
Yes, in terms of what was considered the best way to withdraw money, the tax-efficient way to withdraw money, it was the conventional wisdom said, let's take a retiree with funds in a taxable account, a tax-deferred account like a 401k, and a tax-exempt account, perhaps a Roth IRA. And it said, okay, let's take all the money out of the taxable account first till it's exhausted, then take all the money out of the tax-deferred account until it's exhausted, and then take all the money out of the tax-exempt account until it's exhausted. The idea was this, that the money in the taxable account is taxed most heavily, and then when we're comparing a tax-deferred versus tax-exempt, well, tax-deferred returns are not as good as tax-exempt, so thus that order. And what we did is that our research here, it actually builds on an article I co-authored in the January-February 2012 issue of the Financial Analyst Journal called Two Key Concepts for Wealth Management Beyond. And by the way, that study was reprinted as one of the 10 selected articles in the 70th anniversary issue, the January-February 2015 issue. And let me go through those two concepts and we'll see where that conventional wisdom, we can do better than that. The first principle is in the tax-deferred account, again, like a 401k, it's best to view these as a partnership with the government. Suppose for now that every time you withdraw money, Jim or Pat, from a tax-deferred account, the government gets 25% in taxes. In this case, you effectively own 75% of that partnership, and the government effectively owns the other remaining 25%. Thus, to keep it simple, if you have $100 in a tax-deferred account, that 401k, it's like having $75 in a Roth 401k or other tax-exempt account. So, you know, that's the first. And the second is, remember on that conventional wisdom, it says that taxable accounts are taxed the most heavily, followed by tax-deferred, followed by tax-exempt. Well, as it turns out, yes, the taxable accounts are taxed most heavily, and tax-exempt accounts, indeed, the returns are, as the account type specifies there, it's tax-exempt. But properly viewed, your money in that tax-deferred account is growing tax-exempt. Let's go back to that example, Pat, where you have $100 in a tax-deferred account. For simplicity, you put it in. It doesn't matter whether it's bonds, stocks, whatever it is, the pre-tax return between now and when you take that money out is going to be 100%. So if you have $100 in that tax-deferred account, it grows to $200 pre-tax. You take it out. The government takes 25% or $50. Your money, you have $150 after taxes. That's like having $75 in a Roth IRA invested in the same asset. It grows 100% pre-tax return. You take it out, the $75 is worth $150 after taxes. So if you wish that $100 pre-tax is in the tax-deferred account, it's like your $75 of after-tax funds in the Roth, and the government effectively owns the other $25. But your $75, in fact, grows tax-free, just like in a tax-exempt Roth account. So there's one place where the conventional wisdom is wrong and where we can use this and then apply it and say, here's how we can get additional longevity by how we arrange our retirement accounts or how we withdraw money in retirement.
So you just kind of reframed the issue a little bit and thought about the accounts in a little bit of a different way than the conventional wisdom had been thinking about them.
Yes. So let's go through, if you don't mind, let me go through a major example, an extensive example we used in our study, and I think it'll explain what we did and why we got roughly 3 years longer, a little more than 3 years longer, longevity on a financial portfolio than following the conventional wisdom. So what we did is we took a, let's consider a 65-year-old retiree, and this retiree, she has funds in a taxable account, a tax-deferred account, and a tax-exempt account. She follows the conventional wisdom. She may take all the money out of her taxable accounts in the first 5 years. Then for the next 20 years, she withdraws money from the tax-deferred account. And then in the last few years, she withdraws money from the tax-exempt account. Here's what happens in those years when she's withdrawing money in the tax-deferred account, following the conventional wisdom, she's going to have more than $51,000 each year of those withdrawals taxed at 25%. In contrast, in those early retirement years, when she's taking money out of the taxable account, she'll be in a 0% to 10-15% tax bracket. Why a lower tax bracket? Because if you take, just take a simple example, you take $20,000 out of a savings account at the bank, that's $20,000 to live on, but it's zero taxable income. It's a return of principal. So in those early years, when she's taking money out of the taxable account, she's going to be in a low tax bracket. Similarly, let's take the last few years when she only has money in the tax-exempt account and she's following this conventional wisdom. She's going to have an adjusted gross income of zero. So what we did is said, instead of following the conventional wisdom, let's take some of those money in those early years when she's in the taking money out mainly from the taxable account, but take out enough from the tax-deferred account or convert enough funds from the tax-deferred account to a tax-exempt Roth to fully use the 15% tax bracket. Similarly, instead of having a 0% AGI in those last years when she's taken out from the money from the Roth tax-exempt account, save some money in the tax-deferred accounts to fully use those lower tax brackets, in this case 15% or lower tax brackets. By doing this, in this example, she avoids ever having to pay taxes at 25% on any of the tax-deferred account withdrawals. And this allows her portfolio to last 3 years longer than following the conventional wisdom.
So instead of draining one account and then draining the next account and then draining the next account, you're kind of gaming the system a little bit to keep your tax bracket low so that the money that you pull out of the taxed account isn't taxed at as high as it would be if you just drained the accounts in order.
In particular, the tax-deferred account. Let's look for opportunities, take money out from there where it's going to be. We're going to try to minimize the average of marginal tax rates on funds taken out of tax-deferred accounts. In this case, move some of those money, that withdrawal, in those early years, instead of taking it only out of the taxable account and having a low tax rate, and move some of it to those years when, in the conventional wisdom, you'd only be taking money out of the tax-exempt account and have an AGI of zero. Heck, take out money when, standard deduction and personal exemption, you can take out a lot of money right there that effectively is taxed at zero. And you probably want to fully use the 10% tax bracket as well. There's one other idea that we have in here and that helps. And the second idea is you want to use multiple Roth conversions early in a year. So let's consider, this person who, let's say in January 2013, she converts two separate $25,000 amounts from tax-deferred accounts into, again, separate Roth IRAs. In one IRA, she'll hold U.S. stocks, and the second, she'll hold one-year bonds. Then it comes to the end of 2013, and that year stocks earned about 30%. So what would she do? She would recharacterize the Roth-containing bonds and keep the Roth-containing stocks. What's the advantage here? That 30% return is tax-free not only in 2013, but every year thereafter. You know, if stocks went down in 2013, she would have recharacterized the Roth-containing stocks and kept the one containing bonds. So it's a little bit of a game you get to play. It's an option, and you, after the fact, you look at the end of the year and you say, hey, stocks have gone up, let's keep that one, let's keep those returns tax-free. If the returns go down, you go, okay, we'll recharacterize that one. I don't want to pay taxes on something that's $25,000 that's only worth $20,000 now. So you keep the Roth-containing the bonds. These two strategies, you know, let's look for opportunities to take money out from that tax-deferred account to minimize the average of those marginal tax rates, and this Roth conversion option, those allow that portfolio again to last about 3 years longer than following the conventional wisdom.
So, Bill, what do you expect for the future from this research? How do you expect it to influence practice, maybe influence the way CFA charter holders manage retirement accounts? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, since our study will help retirees savings last longer, we're confident they'll learn how to use it. Yes, it gets kind of complex, but you know, some of these concepts are not that hard to apply. To get to the detail, there are some complications in the real world that were not addressed in our study. I'll give you one example for somebody in a moderate or medium income bracket. Every time they take another dollar out of, let's say, a tax-deferred account, it may cause an extra up to 85 cents of Social Security to be taxed. So that person may say, I'm in a 25% tax bracket, but they take an extra dollar out of a tax-deferred account, it causes another 85 cents of Social Security to be taxed. So her taxable income actually rises by $1.85. And a dollar, 25% of $1.85 is 46.25 cents. That person's in an effective marginal tax bracket of 46.25%. So, you know, this is a complication we did not address in the study. At retireeincome.com, Bill Meyer and I are developing software to extend that, our ideas to, into a model that will incorporate some of these tax complexities, as well as what we talked about in the paper. And because these differences in marginal tax rates are actually larger with these big jumps in tax rates like that, we believe we'll be able to help retirees even more than our FHA study suggests. But just following the ideas in the FHA study, you're talking about another 3 years of longevity. And, you know, that's just simply using the tax code to your advantage. And that's something that everybody can benefit from, using the tax code to your advantage. It isn't like everybody can't find undervalued securities and produce alpha. But by arranging your financial affairs to take advantage of the tax code, everybody can extend the longevity of their portfolio. You can help your client, you know, withdraw money tax efficiently and extend the longevity of that portfolio.
And Bill, before we let you go, is there anything else you'd like to add?
That's it. So we are, and again, if you can find undervalued securities, that's fine. We aren't going to solve that issue. But to us, we think that how can financial advisors best help their clients? Help them make smart Social Security timing decisions on when to claim Social Security. And here we talk about how to withdraw money tax efficiently in retirement to make that portfolio last longer. These are ways that everybody, it can be a win-win for everybody. But the strategy for you and the strategy for me might be different, but everybody can add value. All financial advisors can add value that way. We all can't find undervalued securities. Everybody can't beat the market that way. We encourage financial advisors to add value to their clients' accounts, looking at what David Blanchett of Morningstar would call his gamma strategies. How do you do that? Help them pick a good way, smart way to take money out from their Social Security, when to claim Social Security. And our article talks about helping them take money, withdraw money from retirement accounts tax efficiently. So David Blanchett goes through some other ways to try to add value. We think that's a better approach for a financial advisor to add value to clients than to simply try to find alpha or undervalued securities. Not everybody can, by definition, everybody can't beat the market, but everybody can use the tax code to your client's advantage to consistently add value.
Well, we think that's great here. We appreciate you taking the time to share your research and your ideas with us. We encourage all of you listening to read this article and articles from other CFA Institute publications on our website, cfapubs.org, and you can also follow us on Twitter at cfapubs. Bill, thanks for your time and thanks for listening.
Copyright 2015 CFA Institute. This program is designed to give accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is distributed with the understanding that CFA Institute is not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, tax, investment, or other expert advice. If legal advice or other expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional should be sought.